Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
So 5 years, $170 million extension for Ben Simmons. Who I know we joke about him not being able to shoot, but here's the thing. It's not a joke. It's not a joke at all. It's not a laughing matter whatsoever. His average shot last year was 5.4 feet away from the rim. I joked and said it was 2 feet. Okay, I exaggerated a little bit. 5.4 feet. And on jump shots, Ben Simmons shot a gaudy 20% from the floor for the season. 20% from anything from, I guess, probably 10 feet out. I don't know if they are putting 6 foot jumpers in there or not. Tracy McGrady has said he can't shoot a lick. Steven Jackson's gone on FS1 and said he can't shoot and he's going to cost the Sixers. He is an amazing player in terms of athleticism and what he offers. He also only shoots 57% from the free throw line. He is an offensive liability. Who you just look at him, Jeff, and you have to wonder if you're the Sixers. I mean, I can imagine you don't want to see him go. I also have always thought him and Embiid were not a perfect match playing together whatsoever. No. And so I thought Simmons might go for that very reason into a situation where he could be a little bit more ball dominant and there would be more openings for him in the painted area. But you look at a guy like that and you just have to think, man, if he can develop a jump shot, he could be one of the greatest to ever do this because of everything else that he can give you. But he couldn't shoot at LSU. We've seen guys come into the league and develop shots, but they usually have them by now. Like Kawhi was able to learn how to shoot fairly quickly after he got into the league. John Wall, I don't know that he ever really fully developed anything. Derrick Rose started to shoot quite a bit better when he got to the NBA. I just think Ben Simmons is going to be this guy. Like the guy that you just paid $170 million for, that's pretty much what you're going to get. You're going to get a guy that tries to shoot from about 5 feet away from the rack to get it done. And here's what they have paid. Joel Embiid, 5 years, $150 million. Tobias Harris, 5 years, $180 million. Al Horford, 4 years, $109 million. And now 5 year 170 for Ben Simmons. Your reaction to, I can understand wanting a star, and I can understand wanting to believe that this guy's going to be able to evolve into an offensive player as well. But right now, I mean, he's amazing with the ball in his hands, except when he actually has to shoot it.
Well, first thought is, Jason, we missed our calling, man. We should have been basketball players. Jeez. A lot of money flying around. Yeah, you have to spend the money somehow. So I it's just the way it is in the NBA. Well, to your point at first about Simmons and Embiid playing together, it's interesting they paid both of them because you're right. When Simmons can't shoot, his only opportunity for offense is in the lane. Well, guess who's standing in the lane? Yep. Well, Embiid. It doesn't work together. And you notice, especially in the playoffs, that when Embiid was out, Simmons had much better basketball games because he's able to roam in the middle of the paint without Embiid in the way. He's not in the way in a sense that he's hurting the team, because Embiid's job is to be down there, but just he takes up room. And when Simmons, when he's not in there, Simmons can play. Here's my thing with Simmons is, you know, our job as professional athletes is to improve what our flaws are, right? What we're good at, we're almost going to be always good at. And you work to maintain that. But our job is just to get better. Like that's our offseason goal, right? Whether it's to lose weight, whether it's to get in shape, whether it's to work on our shot, whatever it is, that's all our time is spent on, right? You can have a vacation. Totally, yeah, yes, that's part of it. You can travel. You can enjoy your off seasons, but you have to improve at your craft. And it feels like Simmons hasn't improved, to your point, at all at his craft.
No.
I know he was hurt early on and spent a lot of time rehabbing. But, dude, you should be in the gym every single day for hours learning how to shoot. Has he hired a shooting coach? I know there's people that help teach shooting. Has he done, like, we haven't seen any of that evidence show itself on the court four games. He doesn't even attempt three-pointers anymore, and we're in a league now where, at the position he plays, I know he's more of a point guard and not really a shooting guard, but that's required of your position now, to be able to shoot the basketball. He doesn't even attempt three-pointers. When you have your center attempting more threes than your guard, that's a problem. So they paid him, I think, because they want to keep the core of the team together, and they have to spend money. They have the money to spend. And I might have paid Simmons instead of Embiid anyways, as much as we're kind of bashing Simmons here for not being able to shoot. He's tall. He's athletic. He handles the ball well. There's a reason why you'd keep him over Embiid just in the NBA now, the way the NBA is played now, with so guard dominant. There's an argument to make there. But again, he can't shoot the basketball. And you paid someone a lot of money who can't do a basic thing that's a kind of a requirement of an NBA player. And I think lastly, to kind of round this out, and to your point again, is there just doesn't seem to be improvement. There doesn't seem to be, at least in a desire to get better, because we haven't seen it really. Maybe he just can't do it. Maybe it's a mental thing too. We kind of forget about that at times with athletes. A lot of this is mental, and maybe that's what he's going through. It's a mental block. He might be in the gym shooting 1,000 shots a day, and doing it that way, and just mentally he's working through some issues, and he needs to get better on that side before he can get better on the court. We don't know that, but I think that's probably a big part of this as well.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you look at it and you say, okay, that's what that guy's going to be. He's going to offer you some things that you really like, but he's also, he's not Kevin Durant. He's not Steph Curry. He's not Klay Thompson. He's not even Russell Westbrook.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
We bring in our baseball expert, one of our favorite guests, one of our oldest guests on this program. John, how are you this morning?
Jason and Jeff, good morning. Great to hear your voices again. Hope you're doing great. Love this time of year. We've got the trade deadline coming up here in MLB in a matter of really 2 weeks. And then, of course, football on the other side. So a great time of year.
Yep. So we're going to talk about a lot of positive things, and we're going to ask some questions as well. But let's start here. Of all the time that you've covered this league, I was just overwhelmed emotionally, and just kind of, you just kind of sit back and just wonder who's in control, and maybe be happy about that answer to that question when you see what we saw on Friday night in Anaheim with what happened with Tyler Skaggs and that tribute with his mom throwing out the first pitch the way that she did, with all of the crazy numbers that seemed to kind of mimic that 45, and then throw in that no-hitter. All the times you've covered baseball, have you ever seen anything quite like what we saw on Friday night?
No, Jason, that was emotional to witness it even from afar. I think for those involved in it, it's a moment in their lives they're never going to forget. It did seem to be designed to occur just as it did. It was just remarkable to see it and from beginning to end. And actually, yesterday I spoke with Billy Epler, the GM of the Angels, and he just spoke about how with such great care the people involved in it. Of course, the Angels wanted to have a beautiful tribute first and foremost to the late Tyler Skaggs, and just do right by his family first and foremost. And that, of course, his mother Debbie and his wife Carly, and that was the focus of all the preparation involved in the night, and just making sure that they felt in that moment just as good and as cared for as they possibly could in what's been a tragic circumstance for their family. And after all that care was put into the details, then it was just a matter of trying to honor him as best they could on the field, which, as Billy told me, began with Debbie's ceremonial first pitch. Tyler's mother, of course, was a longtime softball coach at Santa Monica High School, so she knows the game well and is a tremendous athlete. And as Billy said, she threw a strike right over the heart of the plate, and then it was up to our pitchers to do the same thing, and of course they did for a combined no-hitter. So it's it is one of those things, guys, that you think about how it all unfolded, and everybody was wearing Skaggs 45 on the back of their jersey. It was meant to be. Again, very likely from above. When you think about the Angels and the name of the team, everything. It was one of those remarkable days in the history of the game. And I'm sure all those who were there are never going to forget it, and those who were involved are never going to forget it. And as Mike Trout said, they all felt Tyler Skaggs out there with them. So just a remarkable night, and no better way to honor a beloved teammate than what happened on Friday.
With all the talk of juice baseballs and all that, I look at last week. The Home Run Derby was a heck of a lot of fun. Then the All-Star game, you kind of went back to a little bit of small ball. You saw 16 strikeouts during the course of that game. It was more of a low-scoring game. It moved relatively quickly. And then, of course, you had a five-hour game this past weekend. But what do you think the net positives and negatives for MLB were last week? The television ratings weren't through the roof, but that's been the case for All-Star games across sports. It's not just a baseball deal. And I know baseball has the disadvantage now of having interleague play that I think makes it maybe less of a novelty than it would have been before. But how do you feel like baseball should feel about last week in terms of the Home Run Derby and the All-Star game?
I think, Jason, obviously all MLB can do is put on the best shows they can. And I think on back-to-back nights, the Home Run Derby included a lot of wonderful organic moments, and with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Stealing the show even though he didn't win the competition. There is no way, even if you're something of a skeptic about the Derby or even baseball itself, there was no way you could have watched that and said, "Well, that was not entertaining." It's just it was remarkably entertaining. The personality, the skill, hitting 28 homers in a round is pretty remarkable by any stretch of the imagination. No matter what the overall run scoring environment is, or what the ball is made of in this particular year, it was a pretty remarkable feat, and I thought it was entertaining to watch. And of course, the All-Star game, I loved it, and I always try to think about the average sports fan or average viewer, the median viewer, however you want to describe it, in terms of their interest level in the game. And I can tell you that the day after that game, one of the fellow moms here in town and in Michigan came up to me, and we were talking about it, and she said, "How cool was that to see the players talking to each other and the managers talking to each other?" And it was such a unique insight for her and her family to watch that and to see how unique that the interaction and dialogue was during the course of the game. And I came away and said, that's the point there. That's what MLB was doing. That's what Fox was doing with that level of interaction. Baseball, obviously the audience changes and the overall interest level in baseball may evolve from year to year, but if you wanted to see personality and if you wanted to see a sport trying to engage with their viewers, I think that Monday and Tuesday of last week were absolutely perfect in what baseball did.
So I don't expect there to be mic'd up players during games talking while they're actually playing, but I think the idea of hearing more of the baseball players' personalities on national broadcast is valuable. And the cameras they had in the third base coach, first base coach, umpire, all those things. Is there any talk about trying to incorporate some of that into the Sunday night baseball game or the Fox game of the week? Because I feel like that's what baseball's lacking, kind of people understanding the personalities of the players.
Yeah, I think there will be, and there has been already, I think, a conversation about that in the past. Of course, it's all collectively bargained, and so that involves both the clubs themselves and the players being on board with it, and the networks, and then MLB, the union. There are a lot of different constituencies at the table when that's discussed. But I know the idea has existed. I'm not sure at what points in time in that life cycle have those ideas about the regular season not been able to take root and become mainstream. But my hope is that by seeing the success of the All-Star game, that perhaps whoever was not comfortable with it or fully on board. Again, whether it's teams or players, I'm not entirely sure, but I do know the idea has been advanced, and my hope is that by seeing a successful implementation of it on Tuesday, will lead to more of it in the regular season or the playoffs. But I think to your point, it while there were I think a lot of moments during the course of the game that were very unique and things that we didn't often see, and perhaps in a game that means a lot, you wouldn't necessarily want, or the players might not be comfortable with all of their emotions being broadcast or their dialogue. But to your point, the cameras on the third base and first base coach, there are other things that are less obtrusive to the interaction in the field that I think would be very appropriate and not nearly as difficult to achieve as maybe some critics would fear. So I think it was great, tremendous insight, and my hope is that we'll see much more of it in the future as teams and players realize, hey, that was okay. We didn't we had it happen in the All-Star game in front of millions of people, and we didn't give away our trade secrets, and it was fun. And I think that if that ends up being more of the guiding principle here, how do we make the game more accessible and enjoyable for our young audience and young people coming into the game, then I think when our hearts are in that place and our minds are in that place as a sport, we've got a chance to get it right here more often than not in the years to come.
So as we head toward the trade deadline, you look at the National League, every team outside the Marlins is at least in the playoff hunt, right? The Mets are only 5.5 back. The Giants, who I follow, only 3 back, which is remarkable, out of the second wild card right now. Is that going to mean that less teams in the National League are going to be sellers? For example, the Giants, Madison Bumgarner, a lot of teams will want to acquire him, possibly the Yankees. Does it make these National League teams less of sellers come the deadline?
It may in some very limited situations. I still think Bumgarner is going to get traded. I still think Will Smith will get traded by the Giants, because it's not always just the number of games you are back. It's how many teams you've got to pass to get there. And that's where just the sheer mathematics of how quickly could you gain ground on 6 teams when a lot of those teams are playing each other. And so that means that you, by definition, by math, you're not going to be able to gain ground because somebody ahead of you is winning. And that to me is the key thing. Yeah, I think the Giants, Farhan Zaidi, their president of baseball operations, I think they'll be pretty discerning and level-headed about where they're at right now. And while they've played better of late, no denying that, I think that they have to look at themselves and say, okay, are we good enough to beat the Dodgers or the Braves in a playoff series? No. And if the answer to that question is no, then I think you've got to think seriously about selling. And so I think the Giants will. The Rockies, whom of course they defeated yesterday in the doubleheader, they may be moving more towards that direction. They are now under 500. So I believe with the one uniform trade deadline, Jeff, and it's a great question to think about it and point out, but with the one uniform trade deadline, you've got to really be realistic and bold and I think opportunistic if you want to upgrade your club, because there's no longer trades in August. The July 31 is it. That is it. It is not the non-waiver trade deadline. It is the trade deadline. There's one. And so that's your last chance to upgrade your club before the off season, and also your last chance to save some money. So that's as I like to say, that's the final gas station on before you get to Alligator Alley in Florida. You better fill up, and so you got to make a decision there. And so my advice to the teams that are still three or four games back in the NL, while you're close in number, I think competitively there's still a pretty good distance, and I would recommend a lot of those clubs to become sellers.
Feels like we're heading to a Dodgers-Yankees possible matchup in the World Series. What are those two teams looking for to bolster their lineups or their bullpens or even their starting pitching like the Yankees come trade deadline?
Well, it's a great point about where they're at, and of course they have respectively the best records in each league right now, and that would be quite a matchup, Yankees and Dodgers in the World Series. Great for baseball, great for conversation. The Yankees, I believe, are most focused on a starter. They have had some injuries there in that part of their club. Luis Severino, who last year was their ace, he is not going to pitch until probably the end of August at the earliest, and he has missed the entire season. So they're looking at rotation. Domingo Germán has been perhaps their best pitcher in the first half, and he just came back off the injured list, so there's even some injury risk there. I think Robbie Ray is a possibility for them. He's been very good of late. They're pitching for the Arizona Diamondbacks, who are now looking like sellers to me. So I would say watch Robbie Ray's name carefully, Marcus Stroman's name, Matthew Boyd. I think that's what the New York Yankees are looking for. The Dodgers, to me, is all about the bullpen. Their rotation is really strong, and especially for them, they'll be able to go down from, of course, a five-man rotation to a four. So they have even fewer starts to have to cover there for the Dodgers when it comes to the postseason. So their rotation is solid. But their bullpen, you know, Kenley Jansen has had some weariness, I think, in the last couple of postseasons. He's still an excellent closer. He's been good this year, but he has gotten tired in the last two World Series. So Felipe Vasquez of the Pirates, Will Smith of the Giants, those are possibilities just to give as much support to Kenley as possible. And, of course, the Dodgers and Giants, arch rivals, they have not made a trade since Mark Sweeney for Travis Dacre in 2007. So they are due. It's been 12 long seasons. Time for another deal. And no. I think relief pitching going to the Dodgers in the presence of Will Smith or Tony Watson could both be very good deals there for the Dodgers.
John, you're the best, my friend. Enjoy the week. We'll talk to you again soon.
My pleasure. Always love catching up with you guys. Jason and Jeff, you did a great job on the show, and hope to connect again real soon. Love this time of year, and all the best to you and your families.
Appreciate it. He is one of a kind. That's the great John Morosi. Follow him on Twitter, at John Morosi.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Jeff, I know that you have a lot to say about this article. And first off, Baxter Holmes does really good work in general. He's written some of the better pieces that I have seen about sports. And they're these deep dives, kind of like a Seth Wickersham, where it takes a lot of time, a lot of interviews to actually put all of this stuff together. But this is a fascinating deal, talking about the youth basketball crisis in the country, but really more just the specialization crisis for athletes that are being forced to do a whole lot younger and younger. And I don't know where really the start point is, except that the focus is more on specialization and just these guys' bodies being put through so much. And when I say guys, I should be talking about kids.
Right.
Because let me just read this one piece from the second part of this article, which is Under the Knife, Exposing America's Youth Basketball Crisis, written by Baxter Holmes. It talks about, let's see here, typically a procedure to reconstruct a torn ACL might take 60 minutes for an adult, but this one is taking longer because the x-ray technician is wheeling over the machine after almost every maneuver and because each x-ray is scrutinized to make sure the nearby growth plates, which have not yet closed, are not endangered. Extra time is also taken to ensure that the meniscus, the cushion of the knee, is repaired to prevent the early onset of arthritis. These steps would not be taken on an adult who has stopped growing. But this is not an adult. It is a 9-year-old boy.
Jeez.
That's maybe one jump off point. So take it from there.
Well, look, I mean that's an outlier, the 9-year-old boy getting ACL surgery. But in general, this article was, I think, fabulous. It's a great premise. I did not realize that there was such an injury concern, an NBA injury issue with younger players, but it makes a lot of sense. And a lot of this conversation has been focused around baseball, right? Travel baseball, guys,
yes,
blowing out their arms, not guys, kids blowing out their arms. You know, James Andrews, the famed doctor in Florida, has talked about doing, you know, so many elbow reconstructions for Tommy John or Curlin Joe out west doing that as well in Los Angeles. And just kids now getting Tommy John. Some kids even get like preventative Tommy John, essentially, where you put that new tendon in there and it actually makes your arm stronger for the future. And it's a problem because of sports, but especially. So a couple quotes I want to pull out of here before we talk about all this. So He interviewed in the first part of this, the part one, he interviewed a bunch of doctors. Mm-hmm. And their conclusion, those who were highly specialized in one sport at the exclusion of other sports and played it year-round, and this is high school kids, remember, were at a significantly higher risk for serious overuse injuries such as bone and cartilage injuries and ligament injuries. How much higher of a risk? About 125%. Yeah. A separate 2006 study from Bell and his team, I'm going to make sure I found the right his first name as well. University of Wisconsin's David Bell, a professor in his Department of Kinesiology Athletic Training Program, a director of Wisconsin Injury and Sports Laboratory. So a separate study from him and his team found that 36% of high school athletes classified as highly specialized, training in one sport for more than 8 months out of the year. And in those athletes, they were 2 to 3 times more likely to suffer a hip or knee injury. So just specific to hip or knee injury. And this is littered with examples of sports specialization, especially at an early age, hurting children. And this is not a new phenomenon. It's just we're shedding light, especially in the basketball, because we talk about it in baseball, of course, but just in basketball, the wear and tear of playing AAU basketball. I played AAU basketball back when it was not as intense as it was now. Plus, it wasn't my first sport. I was not trying to get a scholarship in it. There's 700,000 AAU athletes now, which was not the case in 2002 when I was playing AAU basketball a couple times a month. And we're finding that these overuse injuries are happening more and more frequently now because your body as a child, as a maturing teenager, is not ready for the wear and tear of playing so much basketball, so much baseball. It really doesn't happen as much in football. But just the idea of sports specialization. And there's a good quote here right at the beginning of the article. The Lakers strength and conditioning coach talking about kind of high-level athletes that can jump very high but can't do much else because they're so used to just working on one plane, one or two planes. You have to work on all three planes, right? And this is a concern that obviously the NBA does have, and I'm glad that they are starting to kind of address this concern. There's another quote here that I want to find that I pulled out here. Here's the best analogy to talk about biomechanically what's happening to an athlete that specializes in sports so early. He said, imagine a car with a powerful engine, one carefully engineered and maintained for years. But as powerful as the engine has become, the car's brakes and suspension are equally poor. So the car can't handle the stress that its engine puts upon it, all akin to placing Ferrari's top racing motor inside a hybrid while making no adjustments to the car's frame. That's what's happening to these kids right now. And I understand if you're a parent and I'm a parent of young children. My daughter actually turns 3 today. And I get it. There's a pressure to specialize your child to get them a scholarship. I started college funds for my kids. I understand how much college costs. I get it. It is a lot of money, right? And I understand. I've talked to parents about this, the idea that you put your kid into softball, into baseball, into basketball, into something, volleyball, and they do it year-round. They go to showcases. The showcases have scouts or talent evaluators, and therefore you get a college scholarship. I understand all of that, but we're finding that maybe the risk is not worth the reward because with social media, with other things, other ways to share film, your kid will be found if they're good enough, right? Your kid will be found if they're good enough. And like Jason, I worry that my son is starting. I signed him up for Little League yesterday for the fall. He is 5 years old, just turned 5 last week. He is going to be behind because kids have been playing for 1 or 2 years already.
That's ridiculous, Jeff.
Which is absolutely wild to me. My wife came to me a couple years ago and was like, hey, his friends are playing soccer. They're playing baseball. I go, I don't care. He's not playing sports yet. He's barely ready to play now. He doesn't have the attention span to play sports. And now all of a sudden, you want him to play at 3 years old? Get out of here. So parents, I understand. I really do understand the need for the specialization and the want to have college covered. I get it. College is expensive, even to someone, and Jason joked about this earlier, even someone like me who has money. I get it. It's very expensive. I get why you want to do it. But the reason why playing so many sports, I think, is very valuable. It's something that I did as a kid. And even if you look at the players who have become professionals in any sport, most of them most of them have played multiple sports as a kid. Very rarely you're going to find a professional athlete who has not played multiple sports, even all through high school. And it's because every sport can carry over. And again, you have to work on multiple planes, right? You have to work on your lateral plane, on up and down, of course, vertical plane, transversional, right? Kind of rotating and things like that. And you do all of those in your different sports. So let's say you're a basketball player. I get it. You don't want to play football. You don't have to. But do track. Do something else in the offseason. Play baseball, which, I get it, baseball's tough. Whatever you want to do, but you can't just settle in and focus on basketball. You will not be able to work everything you need to work in your body as you grow to mature, work on your core and things like that. And just a last comment here on the pro side. So this is something that I've found as professional athletes, especially in the football side where I deal with, have started to go to specialized training centers, is we train too much. We train too much. You know, the season ends for NFL player January 1st, let's say. Let's just do a round date, easy date, January 1st. There are guys I know that go back in the gym January 15th that play a whole season, and you do not allow your body to recover. So they found the trainer for Michael Jordan was the Chip Schaefer was the Bulls director of performance health when Michael Jordan and was their head athletic trainer, I should mind you, from 90 to 98, right in the middle of the Jordan run. This is all in the Baxter Holmes article. He basically said that when the season ended, Michael left and played golf and didn't pick up a basketball again until probably a little bit before training camp. He might have played pickup basketball with some friends, but he wasn't working 8 hours a day at some gym with some shooting coach. Now, that's Michael Jordan is that good. He doesn't have to practice. Some guys have to practice, right? So yeah. that's an extreme, but that's kind of the point, is that you have to allow your body to rest and take a mental break from your sport. So parents listening to this, I get that you want your kid to get a scholarship. I totally get it. But please, at least if you're going to be specialized in something, at least give your kid a break. At least work, or if your kid is with a trainer, have them work on other skills that aren't related to basketball or to baseball or to football. Like I said, I played three sports in high school. Football was my last sport to play. I played basketball and baseball. I think all of them were helpful. You know, end the football season, the next day I'd be at basketball. I end basketball season, the next day I'd be at baseball. They all have different benefits. You know, baseball is a lot of mental, right? It's a lot of failure. How do you deal with failure? In other sports, you don't have to deal with that as much. And working through the mental part of baseball, and then obviously basketball, the athleticism part of it, the hand-eye coordination, the conditioning, football, you know, the mental toughness, physical toughness, using your hands. Hand-eye coordination is a big part of that as well, right? Quick feet, things, you know, so they all help. In football, really, you're in weird body positions, right? So trying to, you know, work on your core and balance and things like that. So they all work with each other. So please, parents, if you're listening to this, don't specialize your son or daughter. It's not good for their health.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Zach tweets us, even outside of injury prevention, there are transferable skills between several sports too. Soccer to basketball, court right. vision and passing, tennis to basketball, lateral quickness, footwork, playing angles. List goes on. Very, very true. I'm going to make another example here in a second, but I think we've got one phone call. Dub, who do we have on the line?
Yeah, we got Richard out in California.
All right, let's go to Cali. Awesome. Talk to Richard. Richard, what say you, my friend?
Hey, how's it going? Listening in. Just wanted to kind of chime in. I've been coaching travel baseball. I have a little brother that I coach. I've been coaching him since he's 9 years old, so this is my fourth year coaching him. And, you know, what I have to say is that, you know, youth specialization, in my opinion, you know, it's just really out of control. You know, parents want to spend every weekend at the baseball field, and I think it's also become like a social thing for them. So what's going on and what I see is that kids are kind of missing out on their childhood, and in addition to the kind of abuse that's being put on their body, you know, they're spending so much time at the field practicing, and there's so much pressure. And I think what happens is there's no regulation, you know, youth travel ball, especially for baseball, there's no governing body. You know, these kids can play for multiple teams. For instance, when my team takes a break, I've seen some of my guys go and play for other teams that are still playing. And it just doesn't give them a break mentally or physically.
Yeah. I mean, it's not good. And parents do have to be a little bit more careful, a little bit more discerning. and have to think about the long game as opposed to the short game. I read that part of Baxter Holmes' ESPN article about a 9-year-old who had popped his ACL. Yeah. Well, and you said it was an aberration, and it is to an extent. But an orthopedic surgeon, the one in question, that now works for the UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital, yeah, examining patients up to age 25, about 5 years ago, a new patient came in, an 8-year-old boy, a local basketball player who had ruptured his ACL, which is what happened to Kevin Durant during the NBA Finals. And this doctor says he was this kid who was basically playing 4 or 5 days a week. He was doing drills all the time, and he was playing and landed wrong. His ACL popped. Doctor couldn't believe an injury could happen to someone so young. In the years that followed, the doc says more kids that age began to come in, and the operating rooms filled with surgical trainees who came to watch because they had never seen such injuries to kids. But in time, it became so commonplace that soon the shock wore off. No longer did an ACL surgery to an 8-year-old raise eyebrows, nor did the constant stream of patients so young seem unusual. 5 years ago, the doctor estimates that he alone would see about 1,500 pediatric sports injuries and perform maybe 150 surgeries, ACL, cartilage, shoulder injuries, in a single year. Those numbers have skyrocketed. Last year stood at 6,000 pediatric sports injuries and 400 surgeries. More than half of his operations are now on those under the age of 14. That is staggering. In a very negative way, it's not good to see. And then you read in the second part of this article, Jeff, about Zion Williamson and about his parents watching him when he was a 14, 15-year-old. And remember, when he was a junior in high school, he averaged 36.3 points per game and 14 rebounds and won 2 state championships and all this. And he's playing AAU and he's playing travel ball and he's playing all the time. And he's got like compresses and all sorts of equipment on his knees and his legs because he's a little banged up. His knee kept hitting the ground in one of these games, and so he was bruised up pretty badly out of that. And this is a guy who's worth, I mean, who knows what money he could be worth on an open market situation, but let's say he's able to develop the jumper that's a little inconsistent right now, develop a three-pointer as well to go along with everything else that he does. What he's, who he's compared to from a power standpoint and an athletic standpoint, I mean, the sky's the limit for him. But you consider how much he's already played. And at his frame in particular, where he does carry a little bit more weight than maybe you'd want to see. And some people have told him about that. And he says, yeah, I've got to take care of my body. He's saying that increasingly more and more now. And he's in New Orleans, so the joke is, well, all the gumbo and the jambalaya and being in, being on Beale Street and everything else, or not Beale Street, but just being downtown and in New Orleans and the food down there, it's going to be hard for him. He's going to battle weight throughout his career. But Zion Williamson and people like him, you can specialize and you can go through this entire process and spend all this time trying to make it to the NBA, and then by the time you get there, your body's ravaged and your career is not what it should be. But here's my analogy, Jeff, and that, and we've talked about this before, because people ask you, I'm sure, how exactly you got from the playing field to what you're doing now, behind the microphone, writing, all of those things. And then there are many people, young folks especially in college, that will write me, not nearly as many certainly as write to someone like Clay, and ask me how it is that I got where I was. And the first thing I say is, well, my Lord and Savior, first and foremost, and second as well. But outside of that, it was being in the right place. But to be in the right place, the focus for me, I realized even if I wanted to end up in radio or if I wanted to end up on TV or whatever, it was not smart for me to spend all my time doing nothing but trying to be on TV.
Oh yeah.
And that becomes the issue. When people ask me, the biggest piece of advice I tell anybody that wants to do anything in media is do it all. Do everything that you possibly can. Right. Write, take whatever TV gig you can, take whatever radio opportunity that you can. Don't expect money for it because it's not going to come. Take every rep in every discipline that you can. Learn how the cameras work. Learn how the audio boards work. Learn how every piece of anything in media works so that no matter what position opens up, you're flexible and versatile enough to be someone that they can call upon and trust. Having a bunch of different skills, to me, at least for my career, has been key in enabling me to be where I am. Yeah, I got radio opportunities, but I wrote for a long time before that point. And I have done television, But all of that came from people hearing me talk on the radio and then saying, he's not ugly enough not to put on TV a little bit here, at least locally. But it gives you more, you can check off more boxes for people. And that's important. And I think you can apply that in this situation to what Zach tweeted us and everything else. Yeah. You can specialize, but you're not getting everything that you could. And you talked about, Jeff, how football was the last sport that you played. But a lot of the other things that you had in those other sports helped build your body properly enough and give you a little bit more well-rounded athleticism that no doubt served you well when football became the thing that jumped out at the end. If you do nothing but say, my son is going to be a professional baseball player, who knows what you are limiting him from doing when it turns out he could have been a top-level tennis player or an unbelievable golfer or whatever it might have been. If you specialize, all you're doing is limiting the chances that he's actually going to be able to succeed or she's going to be able to succeed.
I want to talk about that, but I want to get back to something you said about Zion and the ice packs and whatnot. So I see a therapist, a physical therapist, for lack of a better term. I just call her my body lady. She's a fantastic, and she does whatever I need on my body. I go every other week, and this is sore, that's sore. She does whatever I need to work on my body. And part of her business now, she worked on a bunch of professional athletes. She's kind of done with that now. She just wants to stay at home. And she sees a bunch of high school athletes. And I thought to myself, like, when I was in high school, was I just not sore that did not get injured? Like, we have kids now doing treatments and rehabs that we never did when I was playing. I sprained my ankle, for example, in high school football. I went to the doctor, the pediatrician, and, you know, they're going to be, if you go to the doctor, they're notoriously cautious, right? All right. He's like, here's an air cast you got for a month. I was like, oh, whatever you say, doctor. And I wore the air cast and was back the next day. I just taped over the air cast, right? Like, you just play. Yeah. Like, there was no, like, option to go see a physical therapist for an ankle sprain. Now there is. Now, that's what Dawn does. Like, people's come with, you know, has a groin injury. Or, like, she said the other day, a kid was tight. I was like, what do you mean a kid was tight? They're 15 years old. How are they sore? Like, I don't know if it's a mentality thing. I don't know if it's because there's access to devices now for rehab that I didn't have as a kid. Now it becomes a popular thing to do, but I guess I don't know, like, and maybe that's the problem that we're getting to a point now where kids are playing too much sports, too much special that they're getting previously where they would not be injured or sore or need these things. They now need the services of someone who works on professional athletes to now work on high school kids. I don't know what came first. I don't know why that is, but that's a problem in my opinion. Every time she tells me this, I just laugh to her and to myself. Like, that's wild to me because that was never even considered growing up that I need to go see a physical therapist for a sprained ankle. I was too sore or my hamstrings were tight. I mean, that's just completely wild to me that we're at a point now where that's what kids are doing or their parents are taking them to go see. And part of that is, by the way, hydration. Like, kids don't drink water. Gatorade, by the way, are they a sponsor of this show?
I don't think so.
Okay. Not good for you. Okay? Carbs and sugar. Don't drink it.
Well, you can drink that Gatorade Zero. That's what I drink.
Yeah, that's a little better for you. But if you're going for electrolytes, there's other ways to get electrolytes. That's one thing now that's positive. You can find better ways to get yourself electrolytes. But kids aren't drinking enough water now, so they're getting sore, I guess. But it's just so weird to me we're at this cycle now where kids need these services that were, and maybe it's because they're available now that we didn't have years ago. Our kids just, or do we just play through it? When we were kids, I mean, you played tennis. Like, I'm sure you were sore.
Mm-hmm.
Did you just play through it? Did you?
Yeah, I didn't take time off. I don't know.
Like, I don't know why we've gotten. Maybe it is because of the specialization, right? Like, our bodies are compensating too much. We're breaking down. We're having to see physical therapists at such a young age. I've had I've had 10 in my life. I've had 7 surgeries playing football. Like, I need to see a physical therapist to make sure my body, which does feel outstanding, continues to feel outstanding. Like, I need it. High school kid, you shouldn't need that. That's a problem. If you're doing that for just basic soreness or things like that, then maybe reconsider how you're approaching sports. I know we have an update here. I want to bring up something along the lines of our kind of competitive nature in sports after the update. I think we could finish out in a fun way.
All right. One other quick stat, and then we'll get to Eddie Garcia, is that there are doctors now and biomechanical experts and folks that are looking at the bodies, and they're saying that most bodies for athletes are now peaking at 16 and 17 because of the wear and tear. That's unreal. It's supposed to happen between ages 23 and 25 in terms of your body being what it's supposed to be. By the time these kids are getting to the NBA, I mean, they are beaten down. And imagine the fact that by the time you see them, they're already well past their peak in terms of what their body can handle. That should be a warning sign and a caution to everybody.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.